What should we do?
All of a sudden, as they were passing by Asher's house, they heard Asher's daughter, her name was Serach, and she used to play the harp, which is an instrument with strings. All of a sudden, they got an idea. They called out Serach. They said, Serach, you could do a very, very important thing. You make up a song about Yosef. You'll go into Yaakov. We're going to wait outside the window. You will play the song. Yaakov will be thinking about the song. And afterwards, we'll come in. Now, watch what happened. They taught Serach, or she made up a song. She was a musician. She played the music. She went in to Yaakov. Now, the brothers are waiting outside, like you're going to see in the picture. They're outside the window. And Zadie is sitting in the chair. Serach comes in. Zadie, I made up a song. You want to hear my song? And Yaakov says, okay. Okay. He's blowing his nose, crying, because the whole time he's crying about Yosef. Zadie, I want to make you feel better. Can I play you a song that I made up now when I was playing my harp? Okay. Oh, I'll hear the song. Okay. And Serach starts to play a song. And she starts to sing, hey, Yosef is alive in Mitzrayim. Yosef is alive in Mitzrayim. Yosef is alive in Mitzrayim. And Yaakov says, what kind of a song is that? Yosef, what do you say? She says, Zadie, it's just a song I made up, you know, a pretend song. Oh, but I miss Yosef. I wish he was alive. Yeah, in a song you make up things you wish. You could sing about anything you want. You could make up a song about a dream. It doesn't have to be real. Now, what was the chokhmah? The chokhmah was, he should already be thinking about Yosef and maybe dreaming that he should be alive. And that gets him ready that later on, when they tell him he's really alive, it's not such a surprise. You understand? It's like a good trick. And Yaakov says, Serach, play it again. I like that song. Maybe I'll sing also. Hey, Yosef is alive in Mitzrayim. Hey, Yosef is alive in Mitzrayim. Yosef is alive in Mitzrayim. And she's playing and he's singing and he's clapping. Yosef is alive. Yosef is alive. Yosef, Yosef, Yosef is alive. Yosef is alive. And he's patching the hands, singing and dancing a little bit in his chair over there. Machem mit the fieselach, and patching mit the hantalach. Okay, stop. Finally, kinalach. Serach went over to the window, and she motioned. It's time to come. And the brothers come in. Hey, Ta, we're home. Oh, yeah? Oh, Baruch Hashem. Oh, Shimon, it's good to see you. Ta, we got good news. Sit down, I'm going to tell you good news. What would be the best thing to happen, besides, of course, Mashiach should come? I don't know. Well, we're going to tell you. Yosef is alive in Mitzrayim. Yaakov says, yeah, I know that song. Serach made it up. Let's sing it. Yosef is alive. No, it's not. Tati, it's not a song. It's a real thing. She was singing the song, but it's not just a song. It's a real thing. Yaakov says, you mean it's really true? Yeah, Ta. And Yosef wants us to go back to Mitzrayim, and he wants us to go back there to live. Ah, Yaakov says, I don't believe it. You're making it up. It's just a song, like Serach was singing a song. You drank me a cup. Now, there's a sign. Now, there were some wagons with special presents for Yaakov. There were some wagons. And there was also a sign, because Yosef knew that his father would not believe him. But he had a secret that only him and his father knew. And he told the brothers, if my father does not think I'm alive, and he thinks you're making up a Baba Maaseh, so the day that I left to go to see in the fields how you were, And the day you threw me in the pit and the day you sold me, my father and I were learning in the morning. We were learning Gemara. And nobody in the world knows what we were learning except for us. And you could tell my father what we were learning and then he'll believe you. Okay. Now, Kenalach. The first thing that Yaakov wanted to know when they said that Yosef is still alive, and they said Yosef is a big king in Mitzrayim. Do you think that Yaakov cared that Yosef is a big king in Mitzrayim? Now, some parents would say, oh, my son is a big king. He's a big Mr. Metzias. Over there, he's got a big job. People bow down to him. He's very powerful. He wears a crown. He's in the palace. Some parents would be very proud of their little boy that he grew up to be a big king. And they would be so proud that he's not just some schlamazel who's just got a very small job. He's got a big job. But Yaakov did not care about this. What did Yaakov care, and what did he ask about Yosef? Does anybody know? What is the first thing by Yaakov that his children should be like? Well, he found out he's alive. Baruch Hashem, he's alive. But of course, there's different ways to be alive. If he is from, if he's Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, the first thing he asked, how is Yosef living in Mitzrayim? Like a goy, chas v'shalom? Or is he still keeping Yiddishkeit? Remember, he was by himself for more than 20 years. Without yeshivas, without kosher food, without shuls, without any other yidden. Imagine being only alone by yourself to keep Torah mitzvahs. It would be so hard. And they said, yes, Ta, Yosef is called Yosef a tzaddik. Now, Yaakov was a tzaddik. Yitzchak was a tzaddik. Avram Avinu was a tzaddik. Why don't we say Avram a tzaddik? Yitzchak a tzaddik. Yaakov a tzaddik. Moshe a tzaddik. We say Yosef a tzaddik. You know why? Because by Yosef it was the most special thing that he was a tzaddik, because he lived all with goyim and reshoyim and people that had nothing to do with Hashem and Torah mitzvahs, and still he kept Torah mitzvahs. Avram lived with other people, and other people also were good, and he was a shepherd. He didn't have to do with kings and princes, and he didn't have to do with important generals and officers. He had to do with Shepselech, he had to do with the outside. So Avram, for him to be a tzaddik, was not as hard as for Yosef. Yosef was with goyim and reshoyim and princes and princesses and kings the whole day from morning till night. It was very easy to do an Aveda. To eat with them, to go to their parties, to do all the things they were doing. And Yosef still didn't copy them. That's why he was called Yosef at Tzaddik. By him it was the most special thing to be at Tzaddik. And then Yaakov was very happy. Baruch Hashem, my son is at Tzaddik. That's what I care about. Even he's not a king. Let him have a simple job. I don't care. As long as he's a tzaddik, that's what I care about. Okay, and they said. Yaakov says, you are making up a baba maisa. Impossible. You're only telling me Yosef is alive. He's not really alive. What was the proof? What was the way that Yaakov would really know that the boys were not making up a baba maisa, but that actually Yosef was really alive? Listen very closely, you'll hear interesting stuff. The day that Yaakov said goodbye to his son Yosef, they were learning Torah. No one was in the house. All the brothers were with the sheep and Dayson. Nobody was home to know what they're learning. Only it was between Yaakov and Yosef, right? Now, Yosef sent a message to his father. And the message was this. He says, Ta,
If you don't believe I'm alive, I'll tell you what we were learning the day that I said goodbye. We were learning about the Egla Arufa. The Egla Arufa. Now, this is in the Torah. If a person is found dead, murdered, somebody killed somebody out in the field, nobody knows who killed him. Only we know a man is dead and he was murdered. Not by accident, somebody killed him on purpose. And the Torah says there has to be a special kapara for the city closest by the dead man. Now, they have to measure the closest city. Let's say one city is very close and another city is not as close. They measure the closest city, okay? And they go to that city and they say, the Talmidei Chachamim of this city have to go out to do the mitzvah of Egla Arufa for a kapara. Because in some way they're a little bit to blame that there was a dead man. Let's say they would have given that man food and they would have given that man whatever he needs. They would have walked along with him and they would have taken him where he has to go. Maybe he wouldn't have gotten killed. Why did he get killed? He went by himself. Nobody was with him. Now probably the people of that city will say, we tried to help him, we took care of him, or maybe we didn't know him, we never saw him. It could be that the man came there and they didn't go along with him. Whatever it be, they're a little bit a part of it that he got killed, and they have to take now a calf, which is a little cow. They have to go out to the where the man was killed. They have to put their hands on the calf. They have to say, I'm sorry, Hashem. We did not kill this man, even though we're a little bit to blame. We're sorry that it happened near our city. We'll do tshuva next time to make sure anybody that comes near our city will take good care of him. Nothing will happen to him. We're sorry if we did anything wrong with this man. And then they have to kill this calf. Like you make kaparas, you kill an animal, remember? And the calf is a kapara for them. Anyway, all of this was what they were learning the day that Yosef disappeared and never came home again. And now Yaakov remembered that and he saw that Yosef is really alive. It's really true. Otherwise, who could tell him what they were learning the day that he disappeared? They were learning about the Egla Arufa, all of these halachas, what I told you. The Rebbe once explained why they were learning exactly that day about the Egla Arufa, but I'm not going to go into that. Okay, and so they said, Yosef said we should all go to Mitzrayim because now it's going to be another 5 years of hunger, because there was already how many years of hunger? Two. Altogether it was supposed to be seven. If I said there have to be another five, how much years already went by? Two. And there's five more. Two plus five makes what? Seven. So they said, there's going to be five more years of hunger. We have to go down to Mitzrayim to live there with Yosef. He's going to give us a whole neighborhood for ourselves. And over in that neighborhood is beautiful houses and yards and parks and stores and shopping. And over there is going to be kosher food and restaurants and clothing stores and bakeries. And Yaakov makes with his hand like this, feh. This is not enough for our neighborhood with beautiful houses and parks and all this kind of thing. The main thing is missing over here. And the main thing, of course, is a place for Torah and davening. A shul, a yeshiva, a beis medrash, a place that you can learn and daven. So Yaakov says, you find the most beautiful house and you're going to clean out everything from that house, knock down a few walls, And you are going to go down and make that to be a base of medrash, to be a shul, and a place to learn and daven. And he turned to Yehuda. Yehuda, you go ahead of everybody. You don't wait. We're going to pack up our suitcases and get our kitties with all their toys and the mommies with all of their stuff they have to bring and schlep all the things in the wagons. And we're going to come down to Mitzrayim, and it's going to take us a long time. You pack up your little suitcase and you go ahead of everybody and you make a yeshiva, a shul, a beis medrash, a place with tables and sfarim and an arna kodesh and a sink you could wash over there, and a place that you could have food over there for kiddush and for l'chaim and for brengens. And if somebody has a suddus mitzvah, they could make it over there, and you have a place that's ready to learn and daven. Make sure there are sidurim and chumashim and tehillims. And over there should be others for him to learn. And siches. Tanyas. Chassidus. Gemaras. Okay. So Yehuda went ahead. And now the other families pack up. All together in the whole world, there were 70 Jews that came down to Mitzrayim. Now, actually, there were not 70 yet, because the last one was born exactly when they went through the gates. You know who was born the last? No, Binyamin was already born. No, close. It was a girl. Yocheved. Yocheved was the daughter of Moshe. Was the mother of Moshe. Yocheved, she was born when they went through the gates in Mitzrayim. Yocheved. And altogether, when they went down, they actually got to Mitzrayim, was only in the whole world 70 Yidden. That means Yaakov with a family, and including Yosef. And his family was altogether 70 Jews. Are you listening? Okay. Finally, they went down to Mitzrayim. They went to the neighborhood. It was called Goshen. They made it a beautiful Jewish neighborhood. Yehuda had made a beautiful Beis Medrash over there. And now, Paroi says to Yosef, I would like to meet your father. I want your father to come to the palace. I want to sit on my throne, and I want to meet your father, because, after all, he must be a great man to be your father. And Yosef says, okay, I'm going to go bring my father here. And Kinalach, as soon as Yosef left, Paro, he started to laugh his head off. And he told his big generals, he says, I'm going to play a trick on Yaakov. A good trick. I know Yaakov is a Jew. And I know that Jews don't bow down to Getchkes. But I'm going to make Yaakov to bow down to a Getchke. And the generals say, you just said that a Jew doesn't bow down to a Getchke. How could you get Yaakov to bow down to a Getchke? And Paro laughed so hard his face turned red. And he couldn't even talk. He was laughing so hard. He was jumping up and down on his throne. And his stomach was bouncing up and down. And his buttons were bouncing up and down. And his crown was dancing around on his head. He was laughing so hard. And he says like this. Now, Paro had a special doorway for certain guests to come into his room. This doorway was very small. Let's say you're standing up. And you come to the doorway, you have to bend way down to go through the doorway. It's like half your size. It's almost as big as a window. In order for you to get in, you have to bow down, or else you cannot get in. Now, on the outside of the doorway, there's nothing there except an opening in the wall. Now, you go through the opening, and right next to the doorway, on Paro's side, is standing a big getchke. And as soon as you come into the room and you go through the doorway, you're bowing down and you look up, and right in front of you is this big getchke. What comes out? that whoever goes into that room is what? Bowing down to the Getchke. It's like a trick. Whoever comes into Para's room bows down to that Getchke, or else he can't get in. So Para says, Yaakov is going to go through this door. This is the door for these guests. When he comes in, he's going to be bowing down to the Getchke. I'm going to make a Jew to bow down to the Getchke. Isn't that a good joke? And the other officers started to laugh also, and their faces turned red like a tomato, and they thought it was a big joke, and they could hardly wait till Yaakov gets there so they could see him bow down to the Getchke. And they're waiting over there. Empire's laughing, and they're laughing. Finally, they say, Yaakov, the father of Yosef, is here to see Paroi. Paroi says, let him through the little door. Okay, they see his feet standing on the outside over there by the wall. All of a sudden, a very strange thing happened. Not that Yaakov bows down, but the whole doorway, the whole wall, went up. Just like it grew, the opening got very big. And the opening went all the way up to the top of the wall. Yaakov was standing up straight. He walked right through. And as soon as he got through, the opening went down again. The wall went down again. So what happened? Yaakov went through. He never had to bow down. It came out he didn't bow down to the Getchke. In fact, when he went by the Getchke, he stepped on the Getchke's foot, and he broke a few toes over there from the Getchke. He just gave a good zets on his foot, bang. And now he comes in front of Paroi. And now Paroi says to Yaakov, how old are you? And Yaakov says, I'm 130 years old. And I've had a very hard life. And now Yaakov is going to give Paroi a bracha. And he bends Paroi. He says, Paroi, I'm going to give you a bracha. And this is what's going to happen, Paroi. Whenever you go by the river, the Nilus, which is the big river in Mitzrayim, and it was dry, the water in the river is going to come up and bow down to you. That's the bracha. That is the bracha that Yaakov gives to Paroi. When he goes to the river, the water in the river is going to get up and bow down to Paroi. Now, Paroi didn't believe it. First of all, the river has been dry. It's the seven skinny years. There's no water. Nothing is growing. It's a hunger. And besides, even if there is water, how could it bow down to me? How could that be? And so Paroi decided when Yaakov left, he's going to take a walk to the river to see if it's really true. And he walks down to the river. As he gets to the river, he's standing there. All of a sudden, the river starts to fill up with water. For 2 years, there hasn't been any water in this river, and it starts to fill up with water. During the seven fat years, it was full of water. Then came skinny years. So far, how much skinny years? Two. So for 2 years, it's been skinny. So for 2 years, no water. Okay. All of a sudden, the river starts filling up with water. And as Paro is looking at the river gets up and starts to spill over the sides. And now it spills over the sides, it runs into the fields and waters the field. And everybody saw that, they said, yay for Paroi! Look, the water bows down for Paroi! And the next day Paroi goes again to the river, this time it was full of water, and as soon as Paroi gets there, the river gets up and spills over. Every time Paroi goes to the river gets up and spills over. Now, Paroi liked to do this because, first of all, he showed off that he makes the river spill over. But instead of Paroi telling people that Yaakov gave him a bracha, Paroi, who was Shleth, he made up a lie. People said, hey, Paroi, how do you do that, that the river goes for you and it stands up and spills over? How do you do that? How could the river do that? Now, what's the truth? The truth is that an old Yid, a tzaddik, gave Paroi a bracha, right? Otherwise, it couldn't happen. Whose koyach is that? Hashem's koyach, because the tzaddik who gives a bracha, this comes from Hashem. And Yaakov said to Paroi, you should remember that this is from Hashem. He wants to teach Paroi about Hashem. But Paroi was shlecht, and he was a big balgaive, and a big Mr. Metzius man. You know what he told the people? He says, okay, I'm going to tell you why, and you have to tell your kids. And not only that, they have to teach it in the schools. Okay, I made the river. That's right. I made this river. So it gets up for me because it knows that I made the river, and it has to get up for me because it has to give me covet. And the people said, you mean Paroi, you created the river? Yeah. Paroi says, not only that, you know where I came from? They said, well, we never saw your tati and mommy. Paroi says, I don't have no tati and mommy. Regular people have mothers and fathers. You know where I came from? I made myself, says Paroi. I made myself. Nobody made me. I made myself. And I made the river. Now, Paroi is making himself to be a getchke, right? Who makes himself? Only Hashem came from himself. Hashem does not have a father or a mother. Now, Paroi decided he wants people to bow down to him like a getchke. So he used out this bracha for a lie. Instead of saying it came from Yaakov, he makes a lie that he says that he made himself and he made the river, and therefore everybody should bow down to him. Was Paroi a big tzaddik or a big rasha? And this is what happened, kiddies. Okay, the end of the parsha tells what happened during the 2 years of hunger. Now, all people from all over the world had a hunger. In the time of Avraham Avinu, there was a hunger only in Eretz Canaan. But in Mitzrayim was food, remember? So Avraham had to go to Mitzrayim because Canaan had no food. You remember that? But in the time now that Yaakov and his sons lived, there was a hunger in the whole world. And there was only one place in the whole world there was food. Where was it? Only in Mitzrayim. Now people brought food. I mean, people brought money. They brought silver. They brought gold. They brought jewels. All of the silver and gold in the whole world went to Yosef Kinelach. Do you realize what that means? All of the silver and gold in the whole world went to Yosef for the food. Yosef divided all of that silver and gold into three big piles. One pile he gave to Paroi. Another pile he hid it. But Korach found it. Remember Korach? And the third pile is still hidden somewhere. And when Mashiach comes, the tzaddikim will get that whole pile of silver and gold. Now, the people of Mitzrayim, at first they brought money. They ran out of money, they brought silver and gold. They ran out of silver and gold. They ran out of silver and gold. They sold their land. Yosef owned all the land. They already sold the land, they needed more food. They sold themselves to Yosef. They became his slaves. Yosef had all the land, all the people, and all the slaves, and all the everything. And then finally, Baruch Hashem, the hunger came to an end. Another thing that Yosef did, I'll use cities around here, but of course they weren't there. He mixed everybody's houses up.
He went to Borough Park. He said, everybody in Borough Park has to pack their suitcases and they have to move to Flatbush. He went to Flatbush. Everybody in Flatbush has to pack up their suitcases and move to Manhattan. He went to Manhattan. Everybody in Manhattan has to move to Queens. And he mixed everybody up. Now, why did he do that? In order that his brothers and his family should not feel bad, since they moved, let's say they would come to Mitzrayim and people would say, hey, look, strangers. Strangers are here. They came from a different place. Yosef made everybody should come from a different place. Everybody was a stranger. Everybody was walking around with a suitcase. So when the brothers came down with their suitcases, they weren't different than anybody else. They weren't uncomfortable. When they came with their suitcases and wagons, everybody else was going with suitcases and wagons. So nobody treated them like from the outside.